Bruce, thanks so much for doing this. What have you been doing in the week and a half since the NHL went on hiatus? How have you been filling the days?
Hi, Jeff and Berkey. Good to see you guys. Thanks for having me. Well, it's a good question. Long days, not a lot going on. I have a 9 and 11-year-old at home here, so helping out with some schoolwork, some long walks with the wife, a lot of reading. I guess I'm more of a reader than a TV guy, so... Mm-hmm. That's about it, you know, stepping away from hockey a little bit is nice, but it's been too long now. It'd be nice to get back to work.
What are you reading?
I read different things. I just finished Scotty Bowman's book by Ken Dryden.
Oh, nice.
I read the Nickel Boys. You know, The Obstacle is the Way. There's that. He had three books that I didn't necessarily read them in the right order, so I think I'm on the last one. I try to mix it up. So a little bit, you know, behavioral stuff that might help you with your... with your job, a little bit about, you know, hockey history. And then I just try to read something that's entertaining every once in a while. So I kind of mix it up in that regard.
Berkey?
Yeah, well, I want to ask about, I like when we get coaches on. We had John Tortorella on Butch last week, and we asked him about his first head coaching job. So
Yeah. Let's
go back. So you were a high draft pick. You had a lengthy pro career sometime in the show. A lot of time in the minors. You go back, you decide you want to be a coach. Where was your first coaching job?
Mine was in Jacksonville, Florida, East Coast League. I was playing at the end of my career, had some injuries, so I wasn't in the lineup much, but I was part of Chicago's minor league team. Now, Bob Murray was running it then. And they were firing their coach in the East Coast League, and they basically came to me and said, do you want to get involved in coaching? Because I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do anyway. I knew my playing days were numbered. So I think I was 31 at the time. So that's where I ended up interviewing, got the job, and off I went. I was by myself. There was no assistant coaches back then. We had a couple older guys that helped you out. But, so it was a great learning experience in that regard. You did everything.
And what did you get paid for that? Do you remember?
$39,000. Big money.
Torts' first job, Torts coached in the Atlantic Coast League, and he made $6,000 his first coaching job.
Well, I was a little ahead of him, I guess.
And then where'd you go from there? Like, I find it very interesting. I think our listeners are intrigued. They think, oh, you just become an NHL head coach. You actually don't. It's actually a difficult, time-consuming road for most guys.
Yeah, I mean, I went from there to... Indianapolis and the old IHL. It was a partial affiliate of the Blackhawks. I mean, that was my connection. I was in there as a pro. It's the only organization I played for, but predominantly in the minors. But a lot of times I was in charge of the young guys coming up. You know, you go from, a prospect to a depth player to a career minor leaguer. That was kind of the path I had. And I was there to mentor the younger guys that were high picks and, you know, we're with them on the road. I was their defense partner if they were D-men, et cetera. So that was my end. So I was fortunate enough to get promoted to Indy and look after Chicago's prospects. So that was the road. And then they went under. So I went back to the East Coast League in Trenton. Got hired in Grand Rapids, which was the American League at the time. Ottawa was the top affiliate. And then to Washington. So I got a chance early on. Looking back, I was real fortunate. Didn't realize how lucky I was, probably. But then back to square one again. So started over and then eventually ended up in Boston. So it is a long road for some. Others are a little more fortunate. Others never make it, so I'm certainly grateful.
Yeah, I was never a prospect. I was always a suspect, I think. So you get your shot in Washington. Might have been too soon. You go back 14 years it took you to get back, right?
Yeah, it was a long road. Some different stops, probably about that, right? 14, 15 years, something.
Yeah, I think I was looking at it last night.
Yeah, it was a while. Let's put it that way.
Well, so, you know, yours is a Berkey, I just wanted to interject one thing really quickly here. Yours is, and Berkey talks about this. Bruce, yours is the story of perseverance, like at every single level. I can recall. You're drafted by the Chicago Blackhawks, and then I think it was it a ball hockey injury? Where you tore your knee apart?
Yeah, I tore my ACL. We just won the Memorial Cup, so things are looking good. I had a good year. There's a good chance to make the Blackhawks. You'll never know, but I tore it playing ball hockey, which I did every summer for 3-4 years playing in the league. So it was a good way to sort of stay active and had permission from the team, and it was just kind of a fluky injury. And then they never fixed it properly, so it kind of stuck with me for 2 or 3 years. So by then, you know, guys, the next wave of draft picks come along and you're playing catch up and played some games, but never really caught up.
Yeah.
Sorry, Berkey, go ahead.
It's not like the medicine, what it is today. Knee surgery is almost automatic today. It's almost automatically successful, and it wasn't back in the day.
No, they didn't want to do it. The Blackhawks doctor, my junior doctor did in Ottawa. I was playing for the 67s. He was ready to do it, but I was signed. So they had the final say, and I didn't know. My parents were naive, so was I. So we just followed orders. And in hindsight, should have fixed it. It's probably a, nowadays the ACL is probably 6 months max. At the time, I think it was more like 8 or 9 months. But I just listened to what they say. I wanted to get back in the ice as quickly as possible, right? So I kind of said, yeah, let's do it this way. Let it kind of heal on its own with old therapy, and that just wasn't going to work. So we kind of dragged it out for a couple of years, which didn't help. But at the end of the day, you know, it is what it is. And so I kind of had to kind of deal with that for a while. So that, unfortunately, probably derailed a good shot at the NHL, but like I said, who knows? So off to coaching, you know, and that's opens another door.
What's your favorite part of coaching?
My favorite part?
Yep.
One of my favorite parts for a long time, since I spent most of my time in the minors, to see a guy get up and make it. Because I had to live that life right down in the minors, and I always thought that was very gratifying to me to see a player excel and make it to the NHL. So that was one of the biggest things in the minors. Obviously, in the NHL, the best part of coaching is you know, obviously winning. You know, you want to win. But it's the environment you're in and how you're winning and the culture of winning. So for me in Boston, that's been second to none anywhere, being around the guys like Bergie and Z and Marshy and Krejci, Tuukka, all these guys. So I'm learning from them as much as anything. So I think that's the thing I've taken from the Bruins, is the winning, but doing it the right way and in the right culture and learning how to win. They've actually taught me how to win as much as anything.
I am curious about a few of your players. And listen, every year Patrice Bergeron is in the conversation for the Selke Trophy. Zdeno Chara, they're already, you know, picking out where they're going to put the plaque at the Hockey Hall of Fame. I am curious about David Pastrnak, who this year was very much in the race along with Alex Ovechkin and Austin Matthews for the Rocket Richard Trophy. How hands-on have you been with David Pastrnak? I'm always curious about goal scorers and how much you work with them, as opposed to how much you just sort of say, this guy's got the touch, I'm going to back off. How did you work with Pastrnak?
Well, I'll tell you a quick story about him that tells you a lot about what you need to know about. I'm a big believer of these young guys, like, you know, are they rink rats? Are they self-motivators, you know, self-starters? And David Pastrnak's playing for us in Providence. I believe he's 19 at the time. Goes to the World Junior Championships. I think it was the year it was in Toronto and Montreal. So he's 18 or 19. He comes back. We played a lot of Friday, Saturday, Sundays in the minors. So we were at home on Sunday afternoon in Providence. I think they lost out on Friday night. Travels all day Saturday to get back to Providence. Comes in the morning, and I always write the lineup on the board. So he walks in and comes in and says, you know, hey, Butch, how you doing? I said, David, you know, how's the term, et cetera? And he goes, where's my number on the board? I said, well, you're not playing tonight. I mean, Donnie told me to. You'd come in, take a few days off, and says, no, I want to play. I'm here to play. That's what I do, you know. So all of a sudden, he's playing in the World Junior Championships one night, flies, you know, into Boston, you know, drives up to Providence, and the kid wants to play and tells you all you need to know about him in terms of his commitment to being a hockey player. As for working with him every day, I kind of let him be, you know, like, with the skill part of it. And we've tried to work on his overall game more than anything. Bergie's been a big influence there, Marshy, so... The skill part of it, I mean, I think some of that just has to develop on its own. We put him with the right players eventually, put him in situations for him to have success, power play. We kind of moved him into Krejci's spot. You know, that was a, you know, a decision we had to make with a, you know, a proven guy, but we did it. And, you know, it's worked out well for us. So that's kind of how we handle David. Listen, he's a great kid, comes to work every day. So there's not a lot of coaching that needs to be done with him. It's just, you know, fine-tuning the days he gets, you know, a little loose with the puck.
Does he have the ugliest tape job on a stick you've ever seen?
Yeah, I don't know where that comes from, but all the little kids want it now. Like my son's team, they're all taping it the same way, different
awful.
Colors. And, oh my God! So anyway, he's left his mark. It works for him.
It really is something. Brian was talking about this moments before he came on. Listen, all teams are disappointed that the season went on pause. We can all understand why, of course. But Brian was making the point. Brian, stop me if I'm misrepresenting you here. The one team specifically that really felt it were the Boston Bruins. Top team in the NHL. You know, no hangover from last year's playoffs. Depth at all the positions. Really looking good for the playoff push and go deep into the playoffs. This one was crushing for your organization, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, listen, we're still hoping to get out there and play. I'm an optimist at some point, so we have that in the back of our minds. But if it doesn't happen, yes. And there, you know, different reasons. A, because, you know, we feel we're as good as anybody. I'm not being cocky saying that. That's just the confidence our group has. We have some unfinished business from last year. That was kind of our approach coming into training camp. We have a group that's ready to win now. They've been there. They're not getting younger, our core. So to lose an opportunity would hurt the organization in that regard. And just the fact that we're competitive and, like I said, feel that, you know, we're right there. So it would be difficult. I mean, you'd get over it once you start up again, but right now it would be tough to sort of be told that, you know, you're not going to get that opportunity. So we'll stay optimistic.
Yeah, and I don't think, Butch, I don't think you're being arrogant or cocky at all saying that. Like, you know, again, going back to the year we won the Cup in Anaheim, we talked openly about it with our players right from the start. I know you're not supposed to, but we talked about it in training camp. We said, look around this room. You will never have a better chance than you have with this group of athletes this year. This will be the best chance you have to get a ring. And we talked about it openly, and I really like your team. I think they were poised for success. I hope we get to play. I hope you get to play the string out. I'm not so sure it's going to happen, but let's be optimistic and hope.
Yeah, no, I agree. And we don't hide from it either, Berkey. I mean, we've talked about it. It was our goal going in. Listen, we left a game on the table last year. We want to correct it. And it's been, you know, people have asked us. I feel that our, you know, we went from, in the last few years, from probably a team that had a chance to a favorite. We've talked about it. We don't mind having that target on our back. Our guys have been there. Our core group has won. It's, you know, you just got to be careful. You don't get ahead of yourself. But internally, that is the challenge for our guys, and we've talked about it. And I think, you know, we were on a path, the right path, to sort of meet that challenge. I felt we were playing the right way. We were playing games that the style of play that, you know, matters in April and May and June, and we were relatively healthy. That's always important. So things were trending well for us. But at the end of the day, you know, that's the way it goes.
I want to ask you about one of your goaltenders, and not Tuukka Rask, Yaroslav Halak. Very quietly, I mean, listen, 2010 was big for him, Montreal against the Washington Capitals. But very quietly in his career, Bruce, he's turned in a really, really nice career. 50 shutouts, 919 overall save percentage. Boston, your team, of course, has one of the best goaltending batteries in the entire NHL. What can you tell us about Yaroslav Halak that you think we need to know?
Well, I think the people that look at him know, like you said, how good he's been over the years. When you're not a number one, it's that much more difficult to make that big name for yourself. And maybe he could be elsewhere. I make that argument all the time if he went somewhere else. Now, he's not a big guy that could probably play 60, 65 games a year. That would be what you'd have to be careful. I think that's why it's worked out for both him and Tuukka with us, as we've balanced the workload. But what to know about him? You know what? He's a quiet guy, ultimate professional, hardworking guy in practice, understands. And this is the best part of Yaro, is that, you know, he is the backup, has to stay a little, you know, their role. They have to take a few extra shots, get a little extra work. And at 35 years old with a career like his, I mean, some guys would say, you know, screw that, I'm getting off. But he's been very good at understanding, you know, that part of it. And guys appreciate that. And he's very competitive in practice, and that's what makes him good. That's his style in the net as well. You know, so other than that, like I said, just good, solid pros of both of them, and we're lucky to have them.
Before we let you go, I want to ask you about the last couple of weeks of the season before it went on pause. One of my favorite things about watching the Boston Bruins play was Zdeno Chara, and somehow he discovered a knack for launching hockey sticks into orbits. There were a few stick lifts It was hilarious, Brian. Bruce, as you can very well imagine, Brian, you know what I'm talking about. Chara lifting sticks the way likes of which we've never seen before. What goes through the coach's mind when hulking Zdeno Chara is launching sticks to the moon?
Well, it's 5-on-3. We got a kill. That's what's going through. It happens a lot on the penalty kill, right? So I'm like, Jesus, come on, Steve. But I don't know. It's just, he's so strong that, you know, if you're not leaning on it, it's going. So yeah. They were, I think one was Tampa, one of the last games
yep.
played. And it was the guys looking around like, but anyway, it's just part of the game that sometimes you don't even know what's going on. Like, what the hell just happened? Because, you know, you can't see everything. You're watching the puck and it's going on away from the puck. But it's become a new thing, I guess. So good for him. As long as he gets away with it, we're okay with it.
One of the things we miss in the game right now, it not being active. Bruce, thanks so much for spending time with us today. It's much appreciated.
All right, Jeff Berkey, thanks for having me on.
Appreciate it. Butch.